Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 220, Healing and Transformation Through Imagery. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
A lot of people think that imagery and visualization are synonymous, and I actually have a strong point of view to not group those terms together, because in this case, and for many people, it can be more like a felt sense, the way that it's talked about in focusing. Mm-hmm. It can be inner message. It can come in many forms, because just in the same way that externally we have eyes, ears, nose, mouth for the external senses, there's a reflection of all those in our internal world.
That was the voice of my guest, Leslie Davenport, speaking about her work using guided imagery for healing and transformation. Leslie Davenport is a pioneer in the role of guided imagery in psychotherapy and integrative medicine, and is a licensed marriage and family therapist with master's degrees in both the arts and psychology. Leslie is also an ordained minister in an interfaith Sufi tradition. Her unique background and creative work has been influential in a healthcare revolution that recognizes the role of meaning and the spiritual dimensions of life as an integral part of health and healing. In the late 1980s, Leslie was a founder of the Humanities Program at Marin General Hospital, which evolved into the Institute for Health and Healing in collaboration with California Pacific Medical Center in San Francisco. Her years of clinical experience culminated in the publication of Healing and Transformation Through Self-Guided Imagery, published by Celestial Arts. She's also served as editorial consultant to Aspen Publishers for their book, Holistic Health Promotion and Contemporary Therapies, a Resource for Integrative Practice. Now, here's the interview. Leslie Davenport, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, let's start off by having you tell us something about your training and your background.
Okay. Well, I can certainly get to the academic, more traditional parts of my training, but I'd actually like to go a little earlier than that, because I feel like there's been some very strong influences that have come into my understanding, especially about guided imagery.
Okay, good.
And I like to joke a little bit that my first teacher of visualization when I was a little girl was my cat. And what I mean by that is I would be fascinated with the way that she would, you know, sit on the floor and look up at a ledge and get absolutely still, as though I could trace her sight lines through the air, and then effortlessly she would land. And strange as it may sound, I think it actually gave me my first hint into seeing where you want to go, the power of seeing where you want to be.
Oh, well, that's really interesting.
Probably not what
not
you
what
expected.
Not what I was expecting at all.
And then the other very, very strong influence is prior to going back to graduate school in psychology, I had a whole other career. I have also a master's degree in dance.
Oh.
And actually spent many years as a professional modern dancer, a lot of teaching, a lot of choreography and performing. And the reason that feels like it laid such a strong foundation is that for me, dance was an experiment in what would happen if I embodied a quality. So if I felt joy or if I felt fear and I didn't edit my body, what did my body want to do? Did it want to crumble? Did it want to crouch? Did it want to leap? Did it want to lean? And the link between mind, body, emotion, spirit which is to me what a lot that imagery is about, really began through a different doorway, but feels like the same kind of exploration, but through the window of the arts rather than through the discipline of psychology.
Oh, that's fascinating, and it certainly makes sense.
Yeah. You know, sometimes people say, you know, what a dramatic difference in your life. You were, you know, spent all day leaping around a room, and now you spend all day sitting in a chair. But internally, it feels very, very similar.
Well, that's good. I don't know if it's as good for your body, though.
Well, that's true, too.
Yeah. I spend so much time sitting in front of my computer, I have finally worked up a setup where I can stand. And, in fact, I'm standing right now during this interview.
Ah, great, yeah. Great.
So tell us about the academic part.
Well, I did my graduate program at Dominican University in San Rafael.
In California.
And I was actually looking for a fairly traditional approach to psychology, which they provide a very good, strong foundation, because having already done a lot of exploration through the creative realm, and at the same time, when I was very active as a dancer, I was very involved in Sufism and exploring some other spiritual paths. And in fact, I've had kind of a lifelong draw to interfaith spiritual traditions. So I felt like that part was actually fairly well developed, and I wanted to get a good grounding in the theories and practices of psychotherapy. And so Dominican provided that for me.
And then later you went on to do doctoral work, right?
No, I'm actually a marriage and family therapist.
Oh, okay. I don't know where I got that idea. So how did you get into working with guided imagery, you know, beyond your cat?
Right. Well, when I was completing my studies at Dominican and beginning to accrue hours towards licensure, I wanted to, as I was describing, stay in the body-mind-spirit connection. And I thought, wow, working with health issues because of my interest in the body through dance would be a wonderful way to do that. So I approached Marin General Hospital, the local community hospital, not because they had any MFT internships, but to see if they would be open to working with me in a way that could meet the licensure requirements and give me that kind of a unique experience.
Sure.
And lo and behold, I managed to do that. I managed to get my foot in the door and worked there for a year, arranging some supervision and all that sort of thing. That was in 1989. And during that year, I got permission to do some imagery with the patients there. And the imagery that I knew at the time had come partly from the Sufi tradition, which uses a lot of visualization and imagery, partly from my own intuitive explorations, and from reading some things that I had gathered. So I had sort of created my own model at that point of how to do it. And at the end of that year, it was very, very lucky timing for me. There was a patient at the hospital who had a somewhat typical experience where they were diagnosed unexpectedly with a life-threatening illness, and their experience was, you know, I have no complaints about my medical care, doctors were great, nurses were great, but I had no idea how much it, you know, has caused me to question my fundamental beliefs and who am I, and was surprised by the way family and friends either stepped toward me or away from me. And if the hospital has a way of helping patients address these issues, I want to help support that. And this person gave a $300,000 gift to the hospital to pilot a program that they described as humanizing medicine, addressing human elements. And so because I had been there, you know, creating positive ruckus with imagery and things, they invited me to stay on and actually help develop this program. So I haven't left the hospital system since 1989. And it has grown, and I've had many, many roles. And right now I work in some hospital integrative medicine clinics as an integrative psychotherapist, where imagery is part of what I offer, and also train interns now in a formal program who are interested in learning this as they work towards their licensure.
Yes, and maybe we'll get into some of that some more as we go along. Sort of at root, what is it about guided imagery that got you hooked?
I think that it was not only my personal experiences, but once I started facilitating other people, just seeing how consistently, how faithfully over and over again, that if people quieted their thinking mind, their fear-based thoughts, their ways they would sort of undermine themselves the way we all do. We have our own ways of doing that. And when that quieted down, how reliably they could tap into a sense of wholeness, a voice of wisdom that would give them whatever they seemed to be needing at that point in their time, you know, at that time in their lives. And of course, it was especially dramatic with the population I was working with, because people tended to be in a fairly severe crisis in the hospital environment. And yet, with all of that going on, remarkably quickly, people could find those positive inner resources that they had lost touch with in the chaos of things.
Yes. Well, let's get personal for a moment here. Have you had any experiences with guided imagery in your own personal development that led to transformation or healing?
Well, I have to say that I do use it fairly regularly. You know, several times a week, I will take the time to tap into my own inner images and resources. Probably the most dramatic, a lot of it is just what I would refer to as, you know, staying centered or staying connected to my priorities, and kind of an eyes open wonder about the whole human experience in life. It just is my way of keeping that very fresh and alive.
Okay.
But probably the most dramatic would be actually at that point in my career transition between leaving dance and before I knew I was going to go into the psychology program. There were a number of reasons why my dance career didn't make sense to keep going. There was some sense of burnout. I was starting to start a family. It's much harder to be a performer with young children. But I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I was seeking a source of guidance, clarity. I felt like there were a lot of things I could do that I could have developed skills and talent and had a knack for. But somehow I wanted it to be just kind of have this resonance of, yes, this is kind of where I'm meant to be in life. And I have to say that it took almost 5 years, but through this quieting process, kind of listening for that inner voice or looking for an image, I got a very strong message that went something like, you know, don't worry about, you know, kind of where does humanity need you? Because I was actually thinking in those kind of terms. It was sort of a follow your bliss message, you know, because the understanding was that if each of us does tune into our own innate gifts, talents, predilections, that it will be of service. It will be of service, which was very important to me. And that there are people being drawn to all those areas, whether it's medicine, teaching children, the arts, you know, transformative business, whatever it is, go where you're drawn, feel the freedom to do that, because there are other people like you listening in this way. And it came, and a little later I'll talk about imagery, doesn't always have to be visual.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that, so we'll get to
that. Yes, a lot of people think that imagery and visualization are synonymous, and I actually have a strong point of view to not group those terms together, because in this case, and for many people, It can be more like a felt sense, the way that it's talked about in focusing. Mm-hmm. It can be inner message, which is kind of what happened for me in this case. It can come in many forms, because just in the same way that externally we have eyes, ears, nose, mouth for the external senses, there's a reflection of all those in our internal world. So it doesn't have to be limited to the visual. It can come through our other inner senses.
Yes, that's such an important point. And I'm glad that you mentioned that the process of your transition took 5 years. I think that's valuable for listeners out there who maybe are impatient with their own progress.
Well, yes, and you know, in my book, Healing and Transformation Through Self-Guided Imagery, I tell the story of about 12 different people, and I'm able to shine the spotlight on the transformative moment, but just like with those folks as well, sometimes there were many years of leading up to that point where things became clear, and I like to think of it like fruit ripening on a tree. There's a point when it's just ready to mm-hmm. drop, you know, off the branch. And so if people were to also read those case studies, I wouldn't want them to feel discouraged that, wow, you know, that's so, you know, magnificent imagery. I don't know if I can do that. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I must say, I've been enjoying reading this just released 2009 book, Healing and Transformation Through Self-Guided Imagery. It's beautifully written.
Oh, thank you.
What led you to write this book at this point in time?
Well, you know, it's another one of those things where I feel very, very fortunate. Believe it or not, I have not thought of myself as a writer. I have not aspired to be a writer, although it kind of had always sat in the back of my mind of how to get the word out about, you know, the imagery and its values.
Sure.
But I was giving a talk, this is now about, I guess about 3 years ago, about the work at the hospital, because that I did quite a bit of and still do, giving lectures. And it was just at a conference in San Francisco called Innovations in Healthcare. And I was telling some patient stories about their experiences with imagery. And at the end of the talk, a woman approached me who had been in the audience and said, wow, you know, this is so fascinating. You know, have you ever written about this? And I said, oh, you know, a little bit, articles here and there. And she said, well, I'm with a publishing company. You know, this is something we'd be very interested in. So I was sort of taken aback and thought, well, you know, we'll see. And she said, you know, give me your contact info and I'll have the publisher call you in the next week. So sure enough, I got the phone call and we had lunch and now there's a book.
Yes, and you're going to have to reframe your self-image in terms of not being a writer.
Well, it's been a wonderful process of discovery for me, because again, maybe this will be like the 5 year story. I hope it'll be encouraging for people who maybe had view themselves the way I do about writing. When I started out, I used to say writing felt like squeezing the very bottom part of toothpaste out of an old toothpaste tube. You know, I'd like focus and then a word would come out, the, you know. But the truth is that I found, just like with choreography, just like with imagery, a way to tap into kind of what I would call the flow of it. And after a while, it started coming out, and I did get some help of, you know, some of the tools and techniques of writing as a form. But, it took just the willingness and the time and the persistence until that those gates sort of opened to me, and I didn't realize that was there for me.
Yes. Well, your book focuses on self-guided imagery. And I have to confess that I have trouble motivating myself and focusing if there's not someone else there guiding me. Is this just me, or have you heard this from others?
Well, there's two parts to what I'm hearing you say. One is the motivation, which can happen around any of our aspirations, whether it's, you know, exercising or eating differently or meditating, is we get, you know, excited and then we don't always get ourselves to do it. So that's one part. And then there's the, you know, well, how easy or difficult is it really to bring yourself to these places of tapping into your own inner imagery? Because one of the strong perspectives in the book is that this is not a scripted form of imagery. You know, you don't read a chapter in the book about, you know, now you're walking on a beach and now you're hearing the seagulls. This is about quieting and listening and noticing the images that arise from within you. And it was really important for me to present the book in a way that people could realize that this isn't for just an elite few, or that you have to be able to go into rare states of consciousness. That imagery is a very, very natural way of knowing. It's part of our human capacity. But that because it's been so undervalued and underutilized in this culture, we've just lost touch with kind of where that is in us. So to that extent, I have a very strong point of view that anybody can do it, and I know that that's true. At the same time, I can't help but agree that it can be easier with a guide. You know, it can just provide you with some shortcuts, or if you bump up against some common obstacle, someone experienced with this can help you move through that a little more quickly.
Yes. And you already mentioned the distinction between visualization and imagery. And I know I used to struggle with that feeling that I'm not visual enough, that I have trouble feeling like I can really, quotes, see what I'm supposed to be seeing, or that I can sustain an image for anything longer than a momentary flash. I think I'm very much a kind of a word person and talk to myself a lot. But I do get these very quick flashes. Can you say a little bit more about how you work with that, with a difficult case like me?
Well, you're tapping into what I call the myths about guided imagery. Is sometimes, because it's been around in different forms and people talk about it or write about it in different ways, there are some ideas floating around out there that I think can get in the way. So, for example, one exercise I like to do to just see how easily accessible imagery is, and I'll ask you to do this with me, it just takes 20 seconds, is I'm going to ask you to answer the question, how many windows do you have in your home? Let's just take a second. Okay, and I'm going to stop you, because whether or not you got to the final number, my guess is you started taking a little tour of your house.
That's right, I did.
Yeah, and we didn't have to do, you know, a big trance experience first and breathe for a half hour. You know, and it may or may not have been sort of technicolor perfect visually, but I bet you were starting to access the information you were after.
Yes, I did. I did.
You could see a couple windows in the living room. You could start to walk down the hallway. And that's how natural it is. That's how easy it is. And, of course, if we do take more time to quiet the chatter in our mind and do it in a more focused way, there's even more subtle and more soulful things we can access. And yet that was instant, no effort involved. And you were, whether it was a perfectly clear visual picture, you were accessing information. And that's the most important part, not to see something particular, but to access information.
I love that example, and I would like to steal it. I teach a class on myth, dream, and symbol, and I think I could work that little exercise
in
somewhere.
Go for it. Excellent.
I'll try to remember to give you credit, too.
Excellent.
Now, one of the things I like about your book is that it's chock full of alternate perspectives and resources. You point out that imagery is useful from a wide variety of theoretical perspectives, going all the way from Jung's active imagination to cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yes. And, you know, the positive psychology that's being talked about these days, too, in terms of accessing our wholeness and inner resources. The reason I like to compare it to cognitive behavioral is because imagery often will get us in touch with our belief systems that we're not even quite aware of. It's kind of like the lenses through which we look at ourselves in the world. can come to light through imagery. There's a quote that I just love that's in my book that says, we see the world not as it is, but as we are. Mm-hmm. So, yes. For example, if it's a person who carries a lot of fear, they look at the world as though there's danger lurking behind every corner. You know, is that true? Well, sometimes, you know, but how much of that are we bringing to it? Or if someone is looking at the world as an adventure, then most of what they see is seen that way, or a classroom. So imagery helps us see our own lenses, and I think cognitive behavioral therapy has a place there in terms of what are the beliefs, and are those beliefs that we carry, or lenses, things that support us and support our sort of an accurate view of the world, a healthy perspective, or are they distorted? So that's where I see the parallel there between cognitive behavioral and the role of imagery.
Sure, and there's so many others. I know years ago I took a training in psychosynthesis at Esalen, which drew on the work of Italian psychiatrist Roberto Assagioli, and there was quite a bit of work using guided imagery in that approach.
Yes, very much so, and our different selves or facets of ourselves.
Yes. And I was surprised to hear that visual imagery plays such a strong role in Sufism. I know it seems to play an especially strong role in Tibetan Buddhism.
Yes.
You know, as well as in various shamanic traditions. Why do you suppose that is? Why is imagery so important in those traditions?
Well, again, I go back to what I said before of it is such a natural human capacity. You know, it's even if we just go to the very simple model of right hemisphere, left hemisphere, where a part of us is analytical, sequential, logical, and another side is intuitive and sees the whole picture rather than the parts. We're so dominant in what's asked of us to use our analytic side. And a lot of these other cultures have been dominant in emphasizing these other ways of knowing, these other ways of perceiving. And I do think that these other ways of perceiving help us see the more subtle aspects of life, or begin to move into what might be named as the spiritual side or the soulful side. Mm-hmm. And my point of view is not that we should, you know, give up one for the other, but it's kind of walking lopsided, where you've got a really developed leg and a very weak leg. Let's use all of what we've got. And so I'm emphasizing the imagery to strengthen that component that's really underdeveloped here.
Yes, maybe this leads into your first chapter, which is titled Seeing with the Eyes of the Heart. What are you getting at there?
Oh, language. I don't know if heart is even the best word to use, although, again, you do find it popping up in other cultures, other writings. But it's the place of knowing that's different than our the parts of our minds that we use most of the time to, you know, get us on the phone at the right hour and get us to the market and plan our day. It's that when all of that quiets down, it feels as though it's coming from a very different place. And it often has a quality of wholeness. It often has, by its own nature somehow, a goodness, a loving kindness. And so, for me, describing it as seeing with the eyes of the heart or listening from the heart makes the most sense. But I'm sure there's other ways of saying it.
Well, it's a very evocative phrase, and that's why I wanted to ask you about it. What about eyes open versus eyes closed imagery? I notice you use both.
Yeah, this is now on my kind of delightful growing edge here. And this idea of eyes open imagery really came to me more clearly as I was writing this book. So since I've spent, 20 years professionally involved with imagery, and it even goes back further than that in my own interest and exploration, it struck me one day that, people will rush to come to, an imagery session and sit down, close their eyes, and they might imagine something like a very magnificent tree. And this tree would have a message for them, and it would be quite profound and wonderful. But then I thought, they just rushed past, 20 magnificent trees to get here, and sit down and close their eyes. What about those trees? Actually, we're surrounded by images. We're surrounded by living images. And I thought, wow, suddenly it seemed quite ironic. And I thought, what are the components that make internal imagery possible? What leads us to that sense of wonder and awe? And it's things like having a very open, curious attitude, dropping our preconceived notions, being calm within ourselves. So then I started going, okay, so what happens if I look at this tree outside my window the same way I would look at a tree that came up in an imagery session? Calm, open, curious, fewer preconceived notions, inviting it to speak. And suddenly I felt like I was in the world I had read about a little bit with shamanism, Native American practices, where the world is very, very alive. It's very full of wonder. And I think it has also a parallel with mindfulness meditation. That's similar to what that practice is asking us to do, to be very present to where we are, rather than, for example, eating, but our mind is, at work or whatever it might be. So I started coming up with some ways to help people focus that way as well, to focus their attention on the living images around them with their eyes open. And it's based on very simple facts that make this help us experience the wonder of what's here. Things like that we're flying through space at 19 miles a second. I call it a mud ball. and it's in a universe that has 100 billion galaxies, not stars, but galaxies. That there's 5 million to 100 million species on this one planet. And at the same time, there's every person that's here is completely unique. There's only one you with your qualities and talents and interests. How miraculous is this?
It boggles.
It totally does. Yeah. And yet, I started thinking, having this expansive perspective is not just, for the philosophers and to do in our spare time. It's very practical. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. By telling you a teaching story that I heard.
Oh, good.
Which takes place between a teacher and a student up on top of a mountain, and they're by a beautiful mountain lake. And the teacher has a glass, and he fills the glass with water, and he takes a big heaping tablespoon of salt, and he puts the salt in the glass and stirs it around and asks the student to taste it. So the student tastes the water, and of course it's very bitter, and he kind of spits it out. And so then the teacher takes the same amount of salt, a heaping tablespoon, puts it into the lake, stirs it around, scoops up a glass full of the mountain lake, and asks the student to taste that. Well, of course the water's very sweet and delicious and easy to drink. And the teacher says, it's the same amount of salt. And if the salt is like your suffering, if the salt is like your fears, your distress, but it's held in a small container, the way we often hold our internal perspective, our mind, our lives can get quite bitter. But if we hold the same amount of life's struggles in a spacious perspective, it's much sweeter. It's much easier to taste, much easier to drink.
That's a lovely story.
Yes. And so, you know, while I don't want to diminish whatever, you know, people are dealing with is quite real, and, you know, as psychotherapists, we're trained to meet people where they are. You know, I remember the first time I heard, well, what's the global definition of wealth? And the global definition of wealth is if you have a pair of shoes and some choice around what you eat. You know, and sometimes when I'm struggling with paying my own bills and I think about that, I can't help but feel some gratitude.
Yes.
And I think that's just one of many examples of holding a much larger perspective than we can get into when we, you know, our minds kind of clamp down.
Yes. Yes. Well, maybe we can give listeners a taste of your work, which we're already getting, really, by having you lead us through a brief guided imagery journey. And I want to seize this opportunity. You can use me as your subject, and maybe just, you know, 2 or 3 minutes to give us a sense of how this might go.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Well, get as comfortable as you can where you are, and if you're comfortable doing it, close your eyes.
I am.
Okay, and take a few full breaths, being very generous with your breath. And as you draw in a full breath, know that that oxygen brings vitality to your body and clarity to your mind, stability to your emotions. And when you breathe out, notice that there's a natural letting go quality. That's just a natural part of the out-breath. As you feel that letting go feeling of the out-breath, you can use it to let go of muscular tension, distracting thoughts. A couple more times, breathing in freshness and vitality. And breathing out, feeling yourself relaxing even a little bit more. Let that vital in-breath not only travel through your body, but imagine that freshness entering your mind, that freshness entering your emotions, wherever you sense that part of yourself. And even into the deepest sense of your essence, your core, your who you are. And letting the relaxation also flow just as fully through all the level and aspects of who you are. I'd like to invite you to allow an image to form for a place, an environment, that would really support these relaxing feelings, a sense of being really comfortable and a place where you could be without any pressures or expectations. And as it starts to form, just keep your eyes closed, but describe out loud where you are and what it's like.
Well, I'm by water. There are reeds growing, green reeds coming up out of the water around, and I'm near a waterfall. Mm. I can see the pools that are formed by the waterfall.
Mm. Great. What time of day does it seem to be?
It's a beautiful blue sky, some puffy white clouds kind of day.
Mm-hmm. Do you notice any aromas, any scents in the air?
That's a bit of a stretch for me.
Okay. What are the qualities of this place? How do you feel being here?
Well, I feel very, very peaceful and at the same time very alive with all the moving water and the sound of the waterfall. So I feel very energized.
Great. Take just a moment with that, breathing it in so that it's not only around you, but it's within you, that you're very much a part of this place.
Yeah, I'm getting into the waterfall. I'm letting it flow over my head and around my body.
Wonderful. And what are you aware of as you do that, as you experience that?
Just feeling very alive and tingly.
Great. Well, if this place, this waterfall and the pools and the sky and the clouds, if this whole place had a voice or some way of expressing itself, what would it want you to know right now?
Don't forget to spend time in nature.
Great.
Or remember, to state it more positively, remember to spend time, more time in nature.
Yes. Good. Well, since this is a brief exercise, take just a couple of breaths here and then gently bring yourself back to the room.
Okay. Well, I'm making a big stretch and I feel very, very refreshed. So thank you.
You're welcome.
That waterfall was wonderful.
Oh, good. Well, you know, I think that experience and the way you're describing it too also is now pointing to why it has such a great role in a hospital setting as well as many, many others. But it is because of the way that images communicate directly with our physiology.
Yes, I can believe it. Well, let's see here. Time is getting short, but I want to have you talk about one or two of the cases that you've worked with. Tell us about a health-related case that you've worked with. I know you've worked with cancer, diabetes.
Yeah.
You've got some examples in your book. Perhaps you could relate one of those.
Okay. I'm thinking about one of the clients in my book that I call Daniel. And he had a heart attack in his early 50s. And in some ways he fit the classic profile of what we think of kind of a type A person, very ambitious, very hard driving. He was in the world of finance. And he came to imagery not because he had sought that out on his own, but because the cardiac rehab program at the hospital said, you know, this would be a good stress management tool. We're working on diet, we're working on exercise, we'll get the meds you need, but stress is an important component. So it was on that basis that he came to try it out. And after we had done some basic, you know, relaxation training, he was interested in trying imagery and visiting his heart through an image and just seeing if there's anything it wanted or needed that would help with his healing and recovery. So, as you know, one of the hallmarks of imagery being engaged is that it's surprising. It feels right, but it's surprising.
Mm-hmm.
So when he tuned into his heart, he ended up feeling a kind of heaviness, almost as though there was something like a stone resting at the bottom of his heart, and his heart felt kind of battered and bruised. And at first he thought all of that was just related to the health aspect of what he had gone through. But when I asked him to let his heart speak to him, much the way I invited the waterfall and the environment to speak to you, that's where the big surprise came, because the message was along the lines of, I've been waiting a long time for you to come back.
Wow.
Come back to your own heart.
Yes.
And over quite a number of sessions, that was a combination of psychotherapy and guided imagery, he came to recognize that he was really living out his father's dream in his professional life rather than his own. And his family history had to do with his father moving here from Eastern Europe, very hardworking shopkeeper, you know, wanted to have a better life for his kids kind of thing. But Daniel was always interested in landscape gardening.
Hmm.
But in the picture of, you know, make yourself a success in America, it wasn't standing up to the family message. So anyway, through this process, Daniel really came to realize that there were going to be some new choices he was going to make that was going to be honoring his heart's desire and in a respectful way, giving his father's heart's dreams back to his father. So it really was kind of an individuation process.
Yes.
That occurred, but the catalyst started with this health issue. And then imagery became the bridge for him to really understand about that other piece. And that's often what happens with all kinds of health issues. Not necessarily, I wouldn't go so far as to say that, you know, his choices in his life caused his heart attack, because I don't think anything is quite that clear cut. But certainly he began to feel that his healing and his recovery included recovering his own heart's dream.
Yes. Wow. That's a wonderful story. What about a case related to psychological or relationship problems, for example, anger or career transition? I think you've got some stories along those lines as well.
Yes. Well, what comes to mind is a story in the book, a woman who was having some marital conflict and mostly wasn't sure how to deal with her husband's anger. And again, like several things, the imagery brought a piece of it to light that was very helpful for her, but they also went on to do couples counseling as well. And it's not that it was abusive, it's just that she grew up in a very mild-mannered household, and so any kind of loudness or even directness was distressing to her, and she didn't know what to do with it when he was just, you know, expressing his anger. And so what she ended up doing was finding a way to, again, I think there's sort of an individuation component, because it was more about letting him be him and her be her, rather than trying to get him to stop expressing his anger, and not for her to get so impacted and absorbed into it. And in an imagery session, she saw herself on a stage. She also used to, not professionally, but enjoy dance lessons. And she saw herself on a stage. And she saw her husband in the wings and had an image of him lobbing sort of a bright red ball toward her. And what she was able to do was to bow quite gracefully and have the anger pass over her. And then when she stood up, she could look him in the eyes and he could look her in the eyes and they could converse. And so in a way, you know, the imagery is somewhat transparent. You know, maybe you could talk about that in psychotherapy without using the imagery. And yet somehow the imagery took her right to a symbolic but clear understanding of what she could do in the immediate, in the short term, to not keep playing out the cycle of distress that had been coming up in their relationship. And then again, you know, they went on to develop other communication tools and so forth. But she found a way for herself to feel more protected, more safe, recognized that his feelings were his feelings, that she didn't have to fix it, she didn't have to avoid it, she didn't have to feel distressed by it.
Yes.
So it was the first step. It was the first step in a process for them.
Sure, but the key thing is it did come from her.
Exactly.
It was her own kind of spontaneous imagery that symbolized a solution, really, that was coming from within her. And it was rooted in an experience. She had the experience of that image.
Yes, boy, and you are speaking to two very, very significant points. You're right, that it came from her, so it feels very empowering. It's like an aha. And there's the sense also that, you know, somewhere in me knew the answer to this. So that's very strong. And the fact that it is an experience, and not just somebody's idea and try this out and see
Precisely.
What you think.
Yes.
Yeah, so both of those things, you're right. There are two of the reasons why imagery can be so potent.
Well, Leslie, this has been delightful. I wonder if there's anything else you'd like to say before we close.
I think it would just be to reiterate again the natural accessibility of imagery, that it's available to everyone, and how much richness it can bring to life. So I guess it's just ending with an invitation.
Okay. Well, Leslie Davenport, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
And thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Leslie Davenport, and I hope it was okay that I had her lead me on a guided imagery journey. Hopefully you were able to close your eyes and have your own experience, assuming you weren't driving your car. I'm happy to recommend Leslie's book to you. The title, again, is Healing and Transformation Through Self-Guided Imagery, and it's published by Celestial Arts. Her writing, her tone, is very graceful. I think perhaps it's been influenced by her years of Sufi work and meditation in that regard. The book is also a treasure trove of resources, pointing to a variety of techniques and approaches beyond self-guided imagery per se. You can find out more by going to Leslie's website at www.lesliedavenport.com, and Leslie Davenport is spelled LesliedavenPort.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
Yesterday evening, I was sitting outdoors at a sidewalk cafe on the Petaluma River, waiting to be joined by my daughter and my two granddaughters. A young man walking by caught my eye and said, "Excuse me, are you Dr. David Van Nuys?" "Yes," I said, but I didn't recognize him. I assumed he must be one of my students from years past, and I said so. However, he quickly set me straight, letting me know that he's a Shrink Wrap Radio listener. Amazingly, he recognized me from my picture on the website. I expressed surprise at having a local listener who's not a student at Sonoma State University, and he told me he actually lives in Albany, and East Bay City, maybe 50 miles or so away, but that he was up in Petaluma for a martial arts workshop. I think he said he works in the building trades, but nevertheless has been a longtime listener and even a donor. In the unexpected flurry, I'm not sure I got his name, and I'm not sure I'm recalling it correctly now. I think it might have been Steve Levy. My apologies if I don't have it right. I hope I do. If you're listening now, please forgive me if I don't have your name right. I do thank you for coming up and introducing yourself and giving me the thrill of feeling like a celebrity who now gets recognized by strangers on the street. What next? Paparazzi? At the time I'm recording this, my interview with Dr. Gail Stekety on hoarding as an aspect of obsessive-compulsive disorder is still the most recent episode at wisecounselpodcast.com. It may have dropped to the number 2 spot by the time you hear this, but you'll want to listen to this fascinating interview if you haven't already. And, as I mentioned last time, all the Wise Counsel interviews have typed transcripts, so even if you don't have time to listen, you can download the transcript and quickly scan through it for points of interest. Please remember to tell your friends, colleagues, family, and so on about Shrink Wrap Radio, and I really appreciate it when you mention it on your blog, Facebook, or Twitter. I seem to be gathering more friends on Twitter, and you can follow my tweets at twitter.com shrinkwrapradio. Remember that in addition to iTunes, you can be listening to this podcast on your cell phone using Stitcher. You can find out more. There's a link on our website, or you can just go to stitcher.com. The conversation has picked up a bit in our Yahoo discussion group, and you can join it by using the banner link on our website in the right-hand sidebar, or you can simply send an email to shrinkwrapradio-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. Please help to support this show by making a donation. You have 5 years' worth of content here, complete with well over 100 transcripts. Now, I know many of you are listening on an MP3 player, maybe in your car or jogging or walking or at the gym or at the doctor's office, and you have all those good intentions. Yes, you plan to make a donation. Don't lose that thought. Hang on to it. As soon as you get back to your computer, go to Shrink Wrap Radio and click on that big green donate button in the right-hand sidebar. And of course, I also appreciate your patronage of our sponsors using the discount links on our site for GoDaddy, Avis Car Rentals, Angie's List, PetMeds.com, and Budget Car Rentals. Now, before we get into our listener email, you already know that GoDaddy is the go-to place for all your web hosting needs. In addition to our other GoDaddy discounts on the Shrink Wrap Radio site, you can use my special discount code of SHRINK20H. SHRINK is all lowercase, followed by the numerals 2 and 0 and H. And what you get for using this is 20% off for either a 1-year, 2-year, or 3-year web hosting package. So once again, the discount code is SHRINK20H. Thank you, David, for that value-laden and timely transition. Now let's catch up on some listener email. First, we hear from Leanne, who writes, "Hi, Dave. I completed the survey today and was listening with interest to the bonus talk on dreams. However, only half the content was accessible. The bonus runs at approximately 30 minutes, which means approximately 20 minutes of the lecture content is missing. I was wondering if possibly there's some kind of glitch in the system. Kind regards, Leanne." Well, Leanne, thanks for calling that to my attention. This has happened before, and I'm not sure why, but I was able to go in and fix it. And if anybody else is not getting to hear the whole lecture after filling out the survey, please let me know. It may have slipped up again, and so I'll go in and check on it. Next, we hear from longtime listener Rick, who writes, "Hi, Dave. I just wanted to drop you a line and let you know that I got so much out of your interview with David Wallen on your Wise Counsel podcast. I've already listened to it twice and will no doubt listen again. It had to be one of the deepest shows I've heard to date. It also gave me pause about my own attachment style. I like it when I'm inspired to look within in a direction I haven't thought of before. I remember going over attachment theory in one of my classes in college, giving it much credence then, but I didn't look in the mirror of my own understanding at the time. Finally, your comment about how our friends mirror back to us a self that we can love is probably the best description of friendship I've ever heard." Well, thank you for that, Rick. He goes on another subject, "I wanted to recount a dream to you that my son had. But before I do, let me provide some context. The mother of my 3 children is truly one of the most evil people I've ever encountered. 10 years ago, when my oldest son was 13, his brother 11, and sister 7, she abandoned them and left me and has never looked back since. This was devastating to both me and my kids. During the court fight over property and custody of our kids, there was an attempt on my life that I feel quite confident she was behind." By the way, I should insert that I'm reading this with Rick's permission. He goes on to say, "That's why I made the comment about the Burns interview and exceptions to his rule of both parties being responsible for a failed relationship. I don't think that there was anything I could do to make that situation work, and I assure you I had no clue who I was married to. Anyhow, my middle child, John, who is now 21 and is mildly autistic, if I were to rate his level of impairment on a scale from 1 to 10, I would put him at a 2, but as a young child at a 4 or 5, John has always been special, exceptionally gifted with a wisdom that could only come from a gift bestowed upon him by God. It would not surprise me if Buddhist monks appeared at my door and said, "We're here to fetch our lost Lama." I love that. I would have to say that some of the most profound things I've ever heard said have come from my son John. Of my three children, John has done the best at processing what happened with respect to his mother. His older brother has done less well, and his sister is a complete mess and is chasing after her by emulating her behavior. I'm more or less John's best friend. We see movies together, hang out, and talk about life. Tonight we saw Hurt Locker, a great film, by the way, on the way home. I was telling my son about my own military experience, and a dream I had about his mother years ago ended up coming up in the conversation. I told John that I believe that I have had three God dreams in my life, dreams in which I believe that God or his agent visited me to convey an important message. But before I could get out what the dream I had was about, my son interrupted and said, "I had a dream about Mom last week." I said, "Really, what was it about, son?" My son John has by far been the child that has most cut his mother out of his thinking. He never discusses her, and when she comes up, he says that it's a waste of time to talk about her and politely changes the subject. He has told me in the past that if she died, he wouldn't care because of the awful things she did to him and his brother and sister. Okay, back to the dream. John said that in his dream, his mother stood beside a square pit that was filled with circular saws that were moving round and round. In the dream, she looks at my son and steps forward so that one foot is on one side of the pit and the other remains on the other side. In other words, she is straddling the pit with her legs, her body hovering over the turning blades. John, who is present in the dream, is looking at her from the side and has the urge to help her, but realizes that if he grabs her in an attempt to save her, he would be sucked down into the blades with her and die the terrible death she was about to suffer. My son John explained that the blades in the pit represented fear and death, and the pit represented the trap in life his mother had fallen into, or as he put it, quotes, "a place I cannot follow," end quote. Eventually, she falls into the pit and is dismembered by the saws, suffering a gruesome and painful death. My son then said to me that what surprised him most about the dream was that in it he felt sorry for her. He said, quotes, "I couldn't believe I could feel sorry for someone who had done so many evil things to me," end quote. And then right before our conversation ended, he said, quote, "I just knew I couldn't save her. I understood that if I followed her, I would die with her." That's what Kirsty is doing. Kirsty is his sister, my daughter, end quote. I was stunned as I absorbed the depth of my son's insight. I'm telling you this for two reasons. One, because I wanted to document what I heard tonight before I forget it. And two, because I know you find dreams fascinating, i.e. I felt you would appreciate this story. Thanks for all your hard work, Dave. I'm sure that I represent hundreds of those who never write for whatever reasons that they might have, but appreciate you every bit as much as I and the others that communicate their appreciation to you. Sincerely, Rick the Insomniac. And Rick, that was a very powerful dream that your son had, certainly. And again, I want to emphasize that I have shared this very personal information with Rick's permission. And so, Rick, I know Rick to be a tough-minded thinker, too. He's written some very critical reviews in the past of some of the content. And I agree with you about what a great interview the interview with David Wallen is, not because I'm a great interviewer, but because of the content that he shared with us on attachment theory. And indeed, I found my own self going within and thinking about my attachment history. Longtime listeners will be aware of my one-time guest and frequent contributor, Anna, who writes the Anne is a Man blog out of Israel. And he shares the following frustration over one of iTunes' policies. He writes, "Hi, David. Apple Store has made it to Israel, so now I can finally get an Apple account, which I can leave reviews on iTunes. Your podcast is on the top of my list." And you know, I'm always out here appealing for people to post a good review on iTunes. And so Anna goes on to say, "I've spent a day trying to write a good review for your show on iTunes, and it failed. It turns out that the fact that my account is for the Israeli store, I have to write my review while being logged in the Israeli store. And here's the catch. The Israeli store has no podcast directory. Any podcast I want, I have to reach through the US, UK, or other store. Podcasting apparently does not exist in Israel." Well, hello, it does. People have iPods, iPhones, and they listen to stuff all over the world and make podcasts. Apple just does not acknowledge that, and so I'm still shut out of the normal world of iTunes. I've been frustrated for so long, I couldn't open an account, and now that I have an account, it still won't let me do what I love the most, deal with podcasts. Now you may ask why I do not open an account in a foreign Apple store. It's because the account requires an address in the same country. Okay, I could fake that, but then the final touch is to give my credit card details, and then it fails there, an Israeli card with an Israeli bank. Sign up with the Israeli Apple store, you barbarian. I'm so frustrated about this, shut out and discriminated against. Please send your listenership to my blog, 1,200 podcast reviews that are not on iTunes, not because I'm aloof or in love with Blogspot or my own cozy niche, but because they cannot be on iTunes. Anna. So I do send you to Anna's blog. I've heard other people make the same complaint, other international podcasters, and I don't know when Apple will come around in this regard, but the link to Anna's blog is http://. Anna is a man, and Anna spelled A-N-N-E. So it's annaisaman.blogspot.com. And with that, we'll wrap it up for today. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio. You can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site, and you can leave voicemails for me on Skype. Our name there is ShrinkPod, and in the U.S., you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks to my guest, Leslie Davenport, for sharing her work on healing and transformation through imagery. My next show will feature Azeem Kamisa on developing what he calls a bulletproof spirit, something we can all use in these times. Please stay tuned for just a couple of brief sponsor announcements. So until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind. I want to thank our sponsor, Budget Car Rentals, for their support of Shrink Wrap Radio. May I suggest that you consider Budget.com for any of your automobile rental needs. Using my special code of SHRINK will get you or your family or friends that you share this information with $30 off weekly rentals or 10% off for other time periods. With Budget, you can rent like a genius. I was always a dog person, but now we have a cat. Or perhaps I should say, a cat has us. If you have a pet, you know that their medications can cost you a bundle. Now you can automatically save 10% plus get free shipping on orders over $39 by following the Pet Meds link on our page at shrinkwrapradio.com.